What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to a live edition of the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Nothing much. Another day talking NBA hoops.
Still recovering from that shitty episode of Game of Thrones?
Yeah, it wasn't great. No spoilers, but not great. They said they could do it in 6 episodes. They could not.
Yeah, they needed like 16. But that's for another whole entire show. Check it out on Full Access Hoops. I know we'll talk about it on there. And then Off the Glass, the movies, probably do some more pop culture stuff as well. But if you want basketball talk, you're at the right place. You could check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. And we'll start off with the game yesterday, which was way better than Game of Thrones. And that was Game 3 of Bucks-Raptors. And I'm happy I watched that instead.
I had both up. I was doing a little multitasking because it was pretty slow for Game of Thrones, so I didn't feel bad not giving it my full attention. But, yeah, I mean, double overtime thriller, back-and-forth battle. You got a lot of Kawhi doing it on, quote-unquote, one leg. Siakam, I thought, was a lot better, a lot more aggressive. Danny Green, we're still looking for him. But, you know, it was a good effort for Toronto. It was a must-win game for Toronto, quite frankly. You can't go down 3-0, and they just kept battling, and finally, in double overtime, they got the win.
Yeah, like you said, really impressive performance from Kawhi Leonard on one leg, because you could tell he was banged up from the first quarter after that layup attempt. He kind of had a weird landing. He wasn't moving properly, but he's able to use his strength and his length to kind of make up for it in different aspects of the game. 36 points, 11 and 25. 52 minutes, which obviously is a lot on a bad leg.
Thought he'd come on 51.
Yeah, and Kawhi, I thought, did a really good job on Giannis. That was one of the adjustments Nick Nurse made, was a lot more Kawhi on Giannis. And I think that helps Siakam, who you mentioned had a nice game as well, 25 points, 9 of 18. He looked more energized because obviously defending a player like Giannis is going to take a toll on you. But also Marc Gasol looked a lot more aggressive from the beginning, and I think that just helped open up the offense a lot more too.
Yeah, I mean, Marc Gasol was probably the unsung hero in a lot of ways. With the rebounding, the playmaking that he can provide at the center position, 5 blocks too. So he was extremely active around the rim. You know, we kind of saw him look old in games 1 and game 2, and I thought it looked like he had a lot of extra step. Some of the bounce passes he made, I think it was on a Norman Powell cut. He had a wicked nice bounce pass to him. Marc Gasol was really good. It was a game too where Kyle Lowry was a team best plus 15, and he only shot the ball 7 times, you know, had 4 rebounds and 5 assists. But the impact Kyle Lowry has, even when he's just being efficient, like, he didn't have to take a ton of shots because his impact was just kind of calming in a sense to the offense. It was a really good offensive showing for the Toronto Raptors.
He was very active just everywhere. And if he didn't get in foul trouble, he probably has a bigger game. Also, we didn't even mention him. Norman Powell had a big game. They needed somebody else to have a scoring punch, especially you mentioned Danny Green only scoring 3 points. Powell came in really aggressive, attacking the rim, knocking down threes, kind of got going. That was a rhythm they needed. They needed some extra pop because we know the Bucks have so much offense. And even if like 2 or 3 guys in the Bucks are playing bad, they have 5 other guys that can play well.
Yeah, I mean, Fred VanVleet was really bad. Once again, the guy just
one of 11.
And the fact
that he had a timely 3, though, so I'll give him props on the 1-3 he hit.
His only shot of the game. But the fact of the matter is, you know, you had to play him 30 minutes, and it's still the Bucks really couldn't take advantage of the fact that they had him out there for that long. Obviously, Lowry being in foul trouble, so that was good for Toronto to handle that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, like. I think at some point, Nick Nurse might just have to try Jeremy Lin. Like, I know Lin hasn't played a lot of minutes, and we talked about it on the last show a little bit, but if Fred VanVleet is not giving you any type of scoring, and, like, the Bucks aren't going to shoot this bad from the field, I think they shot under 40% from the field, under 35% from 3, you need more scoring, unless you're going to play Lowry big minutes because you were able to kind of rest in this game because he fouled out. But VanVleet's got to knock down shots. Whatever it is, whatever he needs to do, they need someone to knock down more shots, and he's got to be the guy, or Nick Nurse has to find somebody else on that bench.
Yeah. I mean, and looking at the flip side for Milwaukee, like you mentioned, the shooting numbers, them shooting 37% from the field, 31% from 3. Middleton and Bledsoe, both not good again. Bledsoe, more eye-popping bad. Bench during a lot of key stretches. Antetokounmpo just was off. I mean, it's going to happen when you don't have a consistent jump shot. If you can limit Antetokounmpo on the drive, which Toronto did a very good job on, like you mentioned, Kawhi did a very good job. Their offense gets disrupted. But once again, I mean, George Hill, 7 of 9 from the field, 24.
George Hill trade is a fucking steal. And I don't usually say fuck, but that was a steal.
Absolute,
that was supposed to be a salary dump, dude. Like, what?
I mean, and it's also George Hill, Ronnie Hood to a lesser extent at this point. Both of these guys are prime examples of how location and the framework of a roster can complement your game better, because this type of space and pace that they play in Milwaukee just really helps a guy like George Hill, who's already a plus defender. And then Brogdon, he looks as healthy. You know, I wouldn't have thought he missed time being healthy. I thought he did a very good job. And I'm waiting for either George Hill or Malcolm Brogdon to push into the starting lineup. I think they needed a little more change going into game four, because Middleton, I think you're not as worried about him, but Bledsoe is a big concern.
Yeah, Middleton's still doing a solid job on Kawhi and making him work, where Bledsoe just has not been good. And it's really helped Toronto defensively, because they're able to sag off him so much and help on Giannis, and that's forcing Giannis to get more attention down low. And George Hill's been really good. I think you have him in the backup role. You bring, I know it's weird to kind of bench Bledsoe, but I would probably bench Bledsoe for Malcolm Brogdon, who's been really good. Like, I'm so impressed by how good he's playing coming off injury so soon.
The one thing I do like about Bledsoe is, although the offense is obviously an issue, 3 of 16, I mean, defensively, there's not much to not like about Bledsoe on the defensive end. I mean, he plays physical. He doesn't let you really beat him. So I think that's the one thing why Bledsoe keeps getting so much runtime too, is because defensively you do want him out there. But I think all around you might want to go with Brogdon right now.
And I think the drop off though between Brogdon and George Hill's defense, you know, Brogdon, you could argue maybe is a better defender around the same level, is not as much as the drop off between Hill and Brogdon's offense compared to Bledsoe. Because Bledsoe Correct. Just can't hit the three. And that's just, you know, going to hurt you a lot in the playoffs. Also, I think Nikola Mirotic has been pretty rough in the series too.
Yeah, I mean, I would be okay with them going small and taking Mirotic out, like having Antetokounmpo play the four, Middleton at the three, and then playing a Bledsoe Brogdon. I'm even okay with that if you want to keep Bledsoe in and throw in either Brogdon or George Hill at the two. But I think Mirotic is better off from the bench to begin with. Let him go against that second unit with a different component out there, because I just don't think it works right now in this series. It hasn't been effective.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you might just go small. I think that might just work out. And then you have plenty of options coming off the bench, because, you know, Ersan Ilyasova is not going to have a game two every game. So he only had 2 points in this one. Brook Lopez, I thought, was solid again. 16 points, 5 of 10. You know, he had his impact on the game.
And free throws, too, were a spot we could look at. You know, the Bucks only shot 66%. Raptors shot 80%. Granted, Antetokounmpo being 2 of 7 hurt, you know, him getting to the line is crucial for that offense. If he's not hitting the shots, then it makes a difference. And of course, I don't know how you felt, but there were a lot of travels between Kawhi and Antetokounmpo during stretches of that game. You can't call it all, but I know you had a tweet. You can call some of them Antetokounmpo, because some of them at times are just absolutely blatant.
Yeah, and I think sometimes he gets away with a little bit of like a stutter step or like a double foot drag, where it's just like, it's hard to notice in real life. And, you know, because it's happening so fast and he's so big and he's like just a freak. Like, he literally is a freak. Like, you're not, it's hard to officiate him because his Euro step seems like a travel every single time, but it's really not. But there's other plays where he easily travels and they just don't call it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the free throws. That's the difference in a game. This game went to double OT. You know, you hit your free throws, and that goes for the Raptors too. This game wouldn't even been in overtime if Siakam knocked down his free throws. And I think Kawhi, they said that Kawhi was joking with him, like, yo, you may play an hour extra of basketball because you couldn't hit free throws.
Yeah, I mean, this was a weird game too, because you don't normally see teams that out-rebound, that have out-rebounded another team lose. Like, for example, the Bucks had 63 rebounds to 55 rebounds by Toronto, 13 offensive to 8 offensive. It was just the poor shooting by Milwaukee and some costly turnovers.
20.
Yep.
17 for Toronto, but that 3 turnovers kind of helped make up the deficit in terms of rebounding. So in the free throw. So it's a really close game. I mean, Toronto can't feel like extremely good after this. Like, they know they have to grind it out to get a win against the Bucks, but they can make it a series if they keep grinding out games. They don't want to get into the high-scoring thing. They need to play at a higher pace, but they need to slow down the Bucks' pace.
Yeah, I mean, and if the Raptors are hitting threes like they did, for example, Marcus Gasol had 4 threes, Siakam and Kawhi both had 2 apiece, Lowry and Powell both had 3. I mean, that's a big bonus for them. Obviously, Van Vliet being 1 of 8 is an eyesore, but...
And Danny Green, 1 of 6. They need Danny Green to just start knocking down threes, because the other parts of his game are fine. Just the fact he's not knocking down threes is just hurting their offense.
I didn't even realize Marcus Gasol made 5 shots yesterday, 4 of them were threes. I didn't even put that together.
And I want to say most of that came in the first half too. I mean, they didn't really need him a ton in the second half, but that first half punch gave them a boost, and that gave them a little bit of a cushion to play with the rest of the game.
And we've talked about this too on the outlet of Marcus Saul, especially on the offense. They give him a lot of space when he's at the top of the three-point line. They almost dare him to shoot, and at times he's too passive and doesn't take it, and he's more aggressive.
So we got actually a question in the chat from Adar. Kawhi is the best player thus far, question mark, or Giannis's numbers provide more impact?
I wonder if it's in the series or the playoffs.
We could talk this series, then we could talk playoffs.
In this series, I think it's still Antetokounmpo. I mean, his team is up in the series, and I think even in an off game, you know, 12-23, 7-1-4. I mean, that's almost the offense just wasn't there. So for me, I'd probably say Antetokounmpo, but overall in the playoffs, I think it's been Kawhi.
Yeah, I think this series is close. I think you asked me after game four because I think they're pretty close to a tie, but Kawhi had that rough game. I want to say he shot like 10 of 26. I think that was game two, I want to say.
It was game two because they both had – yeah, Lowry and him had 30-plus in game one.
I think the one thing that stuck out in game three was the fact Kawhi was able to kind of slow down Giannis a little bit, and I think people don't realize how strong he really is. They mentioned this on the broadcast. His ability to kind of like slow him down when he's trying to make that spin move with his body. At the end of the series, I'll give my take, but I think right now Giannis has a slight head. And then, like you said, for the postseason, Kawhi's just carried Toronto because they haven't been amazing.
Yep. I mean, 240-plus points last series, only done by a couple other future Hall of Famers or Hall of Famers already. So, yeah, it's been a nice tear.
It's been impressive. And I think, you mentioned this in the preview, we talked about this on the other shows, Siakam, if he can play well again, and I think the Nick Nurse adjustment of not having him guard Giannis gave him so much more energy for him to be more impactful offensively, and that's what they really need. They need a second scoring option.
So no calf injury excuses, right, for game four? Calf injury's gone. He's no longer hurt.
I think that's fair to say, unless he re-aggravates it during the game, but I thought he looked more spry in game three than he did in game one or two.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think some of it is, too, is just like energy. If you're hurt and you have to guard one of the best players in the NBA, you're not going to play well. But if you're, you know, if he was 100%, maybe it's a different story.
And the crowd was rocking last night, too. They really got up for that
Drake game. Drake was rocking.
Yeah, he was. Hard. He was waving goodbye, but I don't know if you know this, Drake. There's still a game four in Toronto. So,
yeah.
So
I'll be interested to see. Toronto's, they're going to need their fans really big because they need that bench to play better as well in game four. So we'll see what happens. If Toronto wins game four, now we're back to having a series. What do you think is going to happen in game four?
I know I picked Bucks in six originally, but I still don't trust this Toronto team. Like, this was a really good game for them. It felt like the game that they were going to win through double overtime.
Game one almost, but except the Bucks didn't make that comeback.
Yeah. So I kind of like the thought of them, you know, we just want a tough double overtime game at home. We come back in game four again in our home crowd. Everybody's juiced up. I like that in favor of Toronto, but I'm going with Bucks in five. I think they win game four and they head back to Milwaukee and they wrap this up.
I'm all in favor of just the game four win for Toronto because I just want them to extend the series because we're going to talk about the other series, but that one doesn't have much hope to go very far. So I'm hoping that Toronto.
Did you see that if both these teams swept, there would have been 9 days of no basketball?
That's crazy. I know what the final start on May 30th, regardless of whatever happened.
Yeah, yeah. We would have had 9 days of nothing. Well, a lot of the same talk.
We would have just had a lot more rumors from Chris Broussard, which we'll touch on later. So I'm hoping that the Raptors can win game four. I don't feel super confident. I would say I'd give them a 60% chance of winning and the Bucks 40%. But a lot's going to depend on three-point shooting.
And favorable.
60 to 40? I mean, that's not that favorable. I could have went, if I went 50-50, it's a coin flip. So
okay. That's fair.
I'm saying, like, the one thing that I would be scared of if I was Toronto is there's just so many random players. They're not random, but there's so many role players in the Bucks that can just pop off. Like, they can just have a big game. And then the Raptors, it just doesn't feel like they have that many, you know, role players that can just really break out and have a big game. Like, Norman Powell's not going to have another big game in game four. If he does, I'd be extremely surprised.
Yeah. And, I mean, also for Toronto, you're looking at the fact that Antetokounmpo, Middleton, and Bledsoe were all really bad again in game three.
Yeah.
And Milwaukee realistically only needs two of those guys to be on for them to be a really hard team to beat.
I think if you're Toronto, you're hoping maybe you can get another big Kyle Lowry performance like you saw in game one and game four. That's like your biggest hope because there is a little concern with Kawhi. Like, he played so many minutes and his leg is definitely messed up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't know.
Our fans are sick too. He's like, yeah, it's playoff. You play through it. And they're all like, yeah.
I work with a Spurs fan and he's just sick to his stomach right now. Yeah. But moving on to Warriors and Blazers, 3-0 lead for Warriors. You know, there's not really a ton to say about the series other than Steph Curry's been great. Draymond Green's been great. And even when Portland has a 15-point lead, a 17-point lead, there's just some weird feeling that Golden State's just going to come back and win it. And that's what happened in game three. Portland was up by 18.
We are back to the 2015 Golden State or 2016 Golden State Warriors. The 73-win season where it felt like even when they were down, they weren't out of it. And I haven't even felt that way about them with Kevin Durant because they don't have that same – I mean, they still do it, but it's a different team. It's a different layout. They're not – we've mentioned this in the last show. They're not better without Durant, but they play differently. They play faster. The way they move – game three was the best bench performance they've gotten all postseason. I mean, McKinney played some huge minutes. Quinn Cook with the hezzy on Zach Collins was really good. I mean, Iggy went down, a little bit concerned. They got Iggy down with injury, so that's a little bit concerning. But, I mean, Curry looks let loose, free. He doesn't worry about taking five shots in a row like he would if Durant was healthy. Klay can actually dribble more than we realize because he doesn't have to. And Draymond's 20 pounds lighter, down 15 points in game two. They come back to win, down 13 points in game three, come back and win. McCollum, not good again. Lillard came out that he's hurt. And I love that Lillard never, in the post game, never mentioned the injury, never mentioned he wasn't good, just said, you know, yeah, I guess retired, you know, but he's got to be better than the report leaked. So I respect him for not wanting to play the injury card. Which makes sense, though. Separated ribs, that's a tough thing for a guard to play through.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's definitely a major injury. I think you can still be slightly disappointed with his – you know, performances.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, he's still taking 30-plus footers. Like Paul George said, it's a bad shot. A bad shot.
And credit to Golden State, too, because they've done an excellent job of just making his life miserable. And I think, you know, with Kevin Durant being out, they're kind of forced to play better defense, and they've done that in this Portland series, and that's kind of making them a little bit more scary going into the postseason. But when you're getting 19 from Dame Lillard, 5 of 18, you're just not going to win. Like, it's just not going to happen. You need him to have 30. You need CJ to have 30 probably to beat this team unless your role players are just going straight off.
Yeah, and they made some questionable Terry Stotts made some questionable rotation decisions, I thought. He played Seth Curry, for example, for 30 minutes. He only had 5 points. Not necessarily a bad decision, but like Rodney Hood only had 17 minutes, and he's been better. Obviously, he's got a little bit of a hyperextended knee, so he might be a little bit banged up. I could even use more Evan Turner. Evan Turner was really good in 17 minutes. I think he had 12 points on 4 or 5 shooting, hit a three. Myles Leonard was good in the first half. He kind of figured he was going to come back down to earth because he's definitely not their leading scorer at halftime that he was.
I think you kind of felt alarmed. Like, they were up, but, like, yeah, Myles Leonard is your halftime leading scorer. Like, your offense isn't running right, guys.
Yeah, concerning for sure. And then Kander's just almost unplayable in this series. The Warriors just know how to expose a guy who can't guard the pick and roll and can't play defense.
His mobility is just so, you know, he just doesn't have it. And going against a guy like Steph and Klay, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, and plus with his bad shoulder, he's, you know, Looney, to his credit, he's very physical.
Looney's like one of the most underrated players, I feel like, in the league because he was so big last year, and he's been really big this year too.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Cousins going down. I mean, they've asked him once again to play big minutes, and he's tough. Not a guy who obviously demands the ball offensively, not going to get the ball offensively anyways, but you need him to play defense and to rebound and to be a force around the rim. And he provides just that. And he's pretty quick.
Yeah. He's the perfect like fifth option guy. That's just like doing the dirty work out there when you have elite players like Steph, Klay, Draymond and KD when KD's healthy. So having a guy like Looney, I think is such a luxury. And I think he'll get a better contract this year. I was surprised, I mentioned this before on the show, that he didn't get a bigger contract this past offseason.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he's looking at somewhere between 7 and 11 million next year.
I could see someone wanting him. I mean, I wouldn't mind him as my backup big. Like, he's shown to be solid. Obviously some of it's playing with other elite players, but still. And I think another area that sticks out, Golden State obviously shot better, but they still out-rebounded them by 8, 49 to 41. And I think Portland, that's an area where you kind of have to win if you want to win a game in the series or even force this to go longer.
You got the size. I mean, on paper, you have the size, so to speak, with Collins, Myers, and Kanter. And they're a pretty good rebounding bunch, especially in Kanter, of course. So that's got to be an area you win. Then turnovers. Once again, a little bit sloppy on Portland's side. You got to take care of the basketball. And the Warriors have been less sloppy since Durant's left.
Yeah, it's just been a little bit smoother in terms of offensively. You got this series as a sweep. You think it's over tonight?
Yeah, I do think it's over tonight. And actually, Portland did only had 11 turnovers. They weren't as bad, but this felt like they were more costly turnovers.
It happens a lot when you're playing Golden State.
Yeah.
Every turnover seems like a lot.
Yeah, I'm still going with the Warriors in four. I think the last two halftime blown leads is kind of demoralized, especially with the last one being at home. And they looked, the fourth quarter was like 6 minutes to go. You had that feel just watching, and Jay was at the game. Even Jay said, like, just felt defeated. Like, the team looked dead. The fans, Jay, who was there, said they were just dead. They were just done. And I don't know. Normally, you don't bounce back in a game four like that afterwards. It feels like the Toronto Raptors and Cleveland Cavaliers a couple of years ago when LeBron was nailing floating buzzer beaters on them.
Yeah, and I think it also, like, if you look at history, they got swept by the Pelicans last year, and obviously you feel less confident about coming back against a team like Golden State. So, like, you win game four, you force a game five just to lose. Like, I don't think Golden State's is going to lose two in a row. So, for Portland, really successful season, though, like, considering they went to the Western Conference Finals. You know, it was kind of – I'm not trying to be rude, but it was a little bit lucky, but they still got there, and that's something they can put down.
No, I 100% agree with you. I think it's a season you definitely – tip your hat to. It was a very nice job by Lillard and McCollum, especially with that first round series getting past the Thunder, beating the Nuggets in seven after being down 3-2. It's a good run. Yes, they were favored in the side of the playoff bracket they got, not having to see the Rockets or Warriors, of course, but they got the hand they were dealt, and they played it well, and they got to this stage, and it makes them a more plausible free agent destination. Granted, their cap is terrible, so you have to see if you can work around it, but Dean Lillard and McCollum can be serious threats, and you have to wonder what Nurkic healthy would have done for this squad at this junction. Obviously, he's not like a deciding factor, but a guy who averages 16 and 12 wouldn't have hurt this team, especially in a series where we just mentioned rebounding would have been crucial.
Yeah, I agree. See what happens with the rest of the Blazers. You know, maybe it would have been a completely different series. You know, there was rumors that the Blazers tried to go after DeMarcus Cousins in the offseason if they had got him, or maybe they get him this year. But looking at, you know, the news from Magic Johnson today, what were your thoughts on that with him on First Take kind of blowing up the Lakers spot? Obviously, some of it, I think, also some people are kind of exaggerating how it made the Lakers look bad, but some of it also Magic looks bad in it too.
No, I mean, I think it's bad all around. There's nothing good, I think, about somebody going on national TV and pretty much spewing stuff that happened behind closed doors, whether it affects you or the organization. Regardless, it was bad all over. Him saying, I wanted Luke Walton fired. They said basically no, so I'm done. And then they fired Luke Walton anyway. So that was, to me, another, like, blunder. And then him and Rob Pelinka, other GMs, telling Magic, you know, don't trust Pelinka. Don't trust him. You know, he really wanted to go back on movie dates with his wife.
I get, like, that's what I just don't get. Like, I get it, Magic. Like, you have other, you know, avenues of making money, but being a president of basketball operations for an NBA team, especially one like the Lakers, isn't a part-time job. Like, if you got into it, you need to be committed, and you're going to have to give up things. Like, wow, you gave up your weekends. We give up our weekends all the time working on OTG stuff. Like, it is what it is. Like, you get into it, you expect the role, and you got to be better. So, and I thought, like, yeah, I get, like, you're blowing up their spot, but, like, if you're still trying to support the Lakers, all you did is just, like, damage them for this offseason and damage possible negotiations they have moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And then for, like, if I'm Genie, like, I'm just like, yo, why do you keep – we're so close and we're so good friends. Like, you're not helping me. Like, you're burning me on a constant basis by doing this little press tour.
And there was reports that came out that said she reached out to Magic and asked if there's anything she needed to know about why he resigned, and he didn't say anything. So, like, you're not going to tell her, like, how you feel, and then you're going to go on First Take and do it. I think that's a really bad look for him. And I think a lot of people thought he was kind of a joke as a president, and it kind of continues to seal that point. But obviously the Lakers took major damage here because their organizational structure is just completely a mess.
Yeah, no, it's, It gave me the feel today that they don't get anybody.
Yeah, I think you already saw reports, I think, over this past weekend that they're almost starting to eye like the secondary targets of players that maybe aren't the big names because they have a feeling that they're not going to land them. So they're like talking about going after Bradley Beal, talking about Derek Favors, like guys that aren't big names, but they could still help the Lakers take another shot.
Right, and it's almost solidified in my mind that when they – because obviously they're going to try and add talent, they're going to try and get better. There's no question about it. LeBron's okay. He's okay with how this season ended and the fact that they kind of – are looking forward, that number four pick gets moved, I think.
I would put it at like 85%.
Yeah. There's no rookie prospect you get that helps really win now, and you're trying to win now. So I think that pick, especially now with the lack of possibilities at free agency, like you mentioned, I mean, with everything that came out today, do you really want to play for a guy like Pelinka and a guy like Jeannie Buss where there's all this just lack of communication? And he also mentioned, which I thought was odd, how like the promotional side of the Lakers also like had a voice on like the basketball side. So it's just like, why are all, it's just, again, it's just lack of foundation and
lack of structure.
Lack of structure.
You need somebody that's going to make the final decision. Yeah, like I get it. And I think Magic was also like a little bit weird. He was like, oh, everyone shouldn't have an input. I think that's fine. Everybody has an input. But at the end of the day, one person has the final say and the final input. And I felt like also she's like trying to have too much decision in what's going on. Like, I get you're the owner, but you hired Magic to do this job. Trust him to do the job. And I thought like Luke in that whole situation was kind of like, yeah, Luke was an amazing coach for sure. And I know Laker fans hated him, but also the roster structure was pretty terrible too. So it was like, all right, take some blame. Be like, maybe we didn't put the best roster out there for him, especially in this modern NBA.
And yet he still said, though, LeBron James will win a ring with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Good luck. I mean, the probability of it happening, there is a scenario where I could see if they land Anthony Davis and then they sign Kyrie Irving. Like, I still think that is possibly in play because Kyrie going there doesn't really have much to do with the Lakers. It's more so his relationship with LeBron and Anthony Davis. It'll be interesting to see with the Pelicans, like, what they're going to do in terms of, like, are they going to make the move with the Lakers? Or are they still going to be kind of upset about last year and forced to another team? What are your thoughts on that? Because there was some news from Chris Broussard, who we take with a giant grain of salt. He said the Nets are the most active team trying to get Anthony Davis.
I mean, I'm not surprised by it. I think if you're a team like the Nets who finally made the playoffs, you have some nice young pieces, a lot of cap space, a lot of young prospects you could move in a deal for Anthony Davis if you wanted to. I know we tweeted about it briefly, and like, I think a sign and trade for D'Lo would be a big part of that move. Cause I think if you're the Pelicans, you get a young point guard in Zion. It's kind of the 1-2 combination you want. Timelines don't match up fantastically, but I mean, they're pretty much on point, I think.
Yeah, no, D'Angelo's 23.
So. Yeah, okay, yeah. So it's still fine.
Next 10 years for both guys is, you know,
And I think if you're the Nets, you probably also move Jared Allen in that, because if you're getting Anthony Davis, I think you're okay with moving a guy like Jared Allen. So I think there's some nice thought to it from the Pelicans' perspective. And for the Nets, you get Anthony Davis, then you certainly open the door wide open for Kyrie Irving, and then you don't really mind losing D'Lo. Then you got LeVert, Kyrie, and Anthony Davis, and you probably still have Joe Harris. I mean, I don't know what the asking prices for Davis necessarily, but you probably have still a very good core, and you're in the East, so then you all of a sudden become a home court advantage favorite.
Exactly. And then, you know, the Nets former assistant GM Dragan Landon is now the GM of the Pelicans, so that kind of gives them an inside step. Obviously a great relationship with Sean Marks. He's going to value the Nets players a little bit more than someone who hasn't been, you know, with the team for as long as he has. And I think if you're the Nets, there's a couple scenarios where you consider. I think if you could get D'Angelo to a sign and trade, which is extremely difficult. It's not easy to do sign and trades. So if you were to get a sign and trade, I think you do D'Angelo, Rodions, Jared Allen, your three picks for this year, and then maybe a future pick. And then maybe you can get them to take Allen Crabbe back in the deal. And if you have to throw in anybody else, if you're able to keep Caris LeVert and then you were able to sign Kyrie, LeVert, and then have AD, like, you're in a really good position, and then you're still going to have some cap space.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but
this is just like a best case scenario, which I still think that the Lakers could offer a better deal because they could say, hey, we're going to give you four. We're going to give you all the guys we mentioned this year. We're also going to give you future picks. And then, hey, I think that's still a better offer.
I still think it's, if I'm listing all the destinations, the Lakers to me aren't in the top three. For Anthony Davis, I'd probably say Knicks, Nets, Clippers at this point in time. Actually, no. Boston. No. Sorry. I'd probably take out the Knicks and put in Boston. because I think the Knicks are like an outside chance. They have to package the third pick, which would probably be RJ Barrett just because of the Zion Barrett stuff. But I just don't think it makes sense because I just don't think people want to play for Dolan still. I think ownership is a big thing. And I think like the Knicks and Lakers are literally like side by side on trying to be dysfunctional franchises in ownership areas.
I think the Knicks could offer a really good package if Anthony Davis is interested in there, because they could offer, you know, number three, some of the extra picks they got from Dallas. If they'd have to include Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox, and probably like Dennis Smith Jr. and multiple guys. So they'd be giving up a lot, but they do have a ton of cap space. So in a scenario where they do get Anthony Davis, they could possibly sign Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and then assemble maybe one of the greatest teams ever. So I think you have to consider every scenario. Then Boston obviously still there too, because Jason Tatum is the best asset mentioned in any of these deals, because he's looks like a Sherlock to be an all-star player and possibly a superstar player.
It's so funny. I don't know if you saw this. Somebody tweeted like an underrated youth tweet or whatever. And he had like Tatum, Lauri Markkanen, pretty sure he had Jared Allen, and like a bunch of these guys who are like not underrated. Mm-hmm. Well, Jared Allen actually might be slightly underrated,
but like I think a majority of... might be slightly underrated depending on who you ask. But Jason Tatum definitely is not.
Definitely not underrated. Yeah, it was a funny list. Donovan Mitchell was on the list too. It's just like, all right, bud.
It's like you know, Tatum and Mitchell were both up for Rookie of the Year last year. You know, that's a real thing. But it'll be interesting. And I think the Clippers, you know, they are a dark horse. I think they have a treasure chest of assets where I don't know if they have that like one really big piece where you're like, oh yeah, I really want this.
I think personally looking at the Clippers, I think the Clippers are more of a lock to get Kawhi over anybody else. I think that's probably like the ideal fit for them. Mm-hmm. And they're probably their number one target at this point.
They're hoping for Bucks and five. They're like, we're rooting for Corey Waldron over here.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see what happens over there with the Clippers, because they have money and they're going to obviously make some moves. Corey, any final thoughts we get out of here?
Kawhi does not end up back in Toronto next year. I put that on the Instagram story. That was my thought and take of the day. Kawhi does not return to Toronto next year. This is a one-year fling.
So do you think he's a lock to go to the Clippers, or do you think there's a possibility he'd go to another team?
I think the possibility goes to another team. I mean, I think at the end of the day, Kawhi is going to look at the best chance to win. He's going to look at the surrounding cast, supporting cast, the market size and everything else. I think L.A. is his ideal destination. It's home. But I think Brooklyn has a good chance. And I wouldn't rule out Danny Ainge doing some crazy shit to try and get Kawhi.
True. That's like kind of underdog thing. I was actually really intrigued that they didn't push harder to make a trade for him, because I thought that always made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So
he fits the culture a lot more than a guy like Kyrie does, just from we're going to work hard and try and win, and we're not going to really talk much.
Yeah, and he doesn't talk. But that wraps it up for today. As always, thank everybody for checking us out. iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Check out, we are dropping some new t-shirts, Design Tree/Off the Glass. Going to be some fire stuff up over the next 2 days.
For sure. Peace out, knuckleheads.